I think anything can happen in a 60 game season, John. And so I have come up with ways, and you and I, when Ziggy has been in, we've all discussed the ways that it's possible. And I think that it begins with Hyunjin Ryu and Nate Pearson each making 12 starts for a combined 24, and 24 into 60 is 40%. I mean, that's a significant chunk of the Blue Jays games that those two pitchers could start. But a curveball, to use a baseball analogy, was thrown into the mix over the weekend when the Blue Jays found out that they would not be able to play their home games in Toronto this summer. Do you think that has a negative effect on whatever the expectations could be, would be, should be for this team this year? Because if nothing else, I would imagine it's going to be awfully hard for the Blue Jays to feel grounded, given that they're probably not going to have a firm home over the next couple of months.
Well, it certainly could have a negative impact, Scott, but I think that this season, in so many ways, and from hearing players talk around the league, this season is really what you make it. And your attitude in approaching it is paramount. And I really think that the Jays have a nice mixture of some veterans who are going to give the right amount of leadership and perspective, with also a lot of young players who have not yet made their mark on the game and will be very, very hungry. You think about the number of players on the team who have, let's say, more than 5 years of service, and it's not that great of a percentage of the roster. And I think from that standpoint, even in some of the veteran players, you think about someone like Shoemaker as well. Roark has something to prove too, in a sense. Even the veterans have an edge to them this year in terms of the competition of everything. So there's not this this high percentage of players on the team who are close to retirement and close to walking away from the game. These are people that want to make their mark on the sport. And I think in that context, yes, being somewhat decentralized location-wise would be a disadvantage, but Bo Bichette wants to play, and Kevin Biggio wants to play, and Vlad wants to be a star, and you've got a lot of young players wanting to make their mark, and I think as long as the right tone is set, and I think it will be, candidly, with this group, that I think this could actually be one of those sentiments where for 2 months, two-plus months, hey, we can deal with anything for 2 months. Let's just put our best foot forward, and they may still be able to surprise a lot of people in that way.
John Paul Morosi is our guest. He is with MLB Network and Leadoff's Monday Morning MLB Analyst. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
With all that being said, how do you think, given that whole scenario, how do they fare against the rest of the division right now?
Well, Tim, I look at the division and say that there's an opportunity here. Certainly the Yankees are still my pick to win the division. I think they're really deep, and we saw Stan hit a home run yesterday. He looks great. The Yankees still have the best roster in this division, but the Red Sox are a team in transition, clearly. Baltimore still has a good distance to go in their rebuild. And I'm not necessarily convinced that the Rays are clearly the second best team in this division. I look at the Jays to be in the mix for a wild card spot throughout the season. I really believe that. And I would agree with what Scott said about Hyunjin Ryu and looking at Pearson as well. Ryu won opening day last year. He's got experience on an opening day start. If he can set a really good tempo, and I know we're not going to get too much into overweighting opening day, but it's really worth three games almost in a normal situation. And if they get off to a good start and Ryu has a really good tempo in game one and helps to set a really good rhythm for the bullpen, this team can really surprise some people. And you've got those young stars that have so much on their minds in terms of wanting to really make their mark on the major leagues. And I think Gurriel is still overlooked by a lot of people and shouldn't be. I think Grichuk is now one of the veterans in this team who I think has a chance to have a really good season as well. This is a club that I think is very scary. And if I'm Tampa Bay, I'm not feeling entirely confident that I'm going to be able to finish ahead of Toronto. I think this is a team that can easily finish second. And if you do that, you're right in the wild card mix till the very last days of the season.
The personal side of it for me, John, says get Nate Pearson up here and get him into the two spot in the rotation right behind Ryu. Throw him Saturday against the Rays. And then the business side of the game, the for lack of a better way to put it, logical side of the game, says keep him down a week so that you can control him for a seventh season before he's eligible for free agency. I'm not going to ask you what you expect here because I think the latter is going to happen. But do you think we get to a point, and I think what I'm asking is it the result of the next CBA negotiation where somehow, some way, there isn't this murkiness over service time?
I hope so, because I think it's for the best of the sport. And I think back to, you know, before we would get too carried away in the narrative of what the extra couple of days could mean. I remember Chris Bryant back and forth back in 2015, and the Cubs, after having him start that season in the minor leagues, still made it to the playoffs, and so in that sense, all was well. And in fact, they won the wild card game that year and got to the NLCS, and it didn't hold them back. That's just one data point. But, of course, that situation was grieved up until this past winter time, and that's it's just not productive. I would hope to see that in the future we would see service time and credits based more on years since you signed your first contract. That would be a way, maybe a little more similar to the National Hockey League, where you could have some different service time tied into just the year since the contract was first signed. And that way, when the player's ready, there's more incentive to have him come up right then. I think that's one possibility. But the way it is now, it's difficult because you're really putting incentives out there for teams to make decisions for reasons that are not about putting the very best roster on the field every day, which is what I think, especially now in this new era, I think transparency is going to be so important, and the ability to really speak about your planning and what your roster looks like every day. I would hope that gets addressed in the next CBA, and I'm optimistic that through this time, I realize it's been a difficult period for labor relations in the midst of obviously a tragic circumstance for the world, but I would hope that through a lot of the conversations that have occurred here recently that we're able to arrive at a more equitable agreement here in the next chapter for the CBA.
Given the set of circumstances, obviously, with everything that's going on and the fact that baseball hadn't started their season yet, did you come up with any scenarios, or is there anything you wish that MLB had done different than to have a look like this? Is there anything that you would have done differently in terms of, like, postseason, in terms of just how you structured the whole season?
Right. Well, I mean, it's a great question, Tim, because I think that there's been a lot of debate back and forth. I know the commissioner made this statement about 60 games being the most that they could have possibly gotten in. I would say this on baseball's behalf. I have a hard time criticizing the timing and the number of games when it's really apparent, if you ask a lot of people around the sport, that there's not certainty here at all that we're going to be able to finish the 60 games that are scheduled. So in this climate, it's difficult for me to second guess too much the way everything's been laid out, because we just don't have a lot of certainty as to what the end game is going to look like. This is very much a week to week situation for everybody. And so in that respect, even circling back to the Jays, while obviously I want them to be able to have a long-term home for the season, and it's really unfortunate what's happened to the franchise in terms of not being able to play in one set location for the season, we are all living on some level of a week-to-week basis here and just thinking about where we're going to be week-to-week. So that is kind of the situation normal right now for the sport. So I think 60 games is a good number. They were able to get that amount, and now it's just a matter of making it work. And I'll say this, Tim, I really credit the fact that the last week the positive test rate for the Tier 1 people was 0.02%, which is players and close staff. It's an incredibly low number, and I think it really reflects that the players have taken the medical advice to heart, and I'm really, frankly, proud of what the sport has done since camps opened.
With John Paul Morosi, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. No doubt that our federal government's decision over the weekend, John, has caught the attention of people across baseball, and I'll prove it by saying that, yes, I was one of those guys on MLB TV last night watching a little bit of the Cubs-White Sox in a preseason game from Wrigley Field, and Len Casper and Jim DeShays were talking about it on the Marquee Sports Network's Cubs broadcasts. I mean, people are talking about the fact that the Blue Jays right now don't have a home. Our Shai Davidi, Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun, and others are floating possibilities, and one of those possibilities is Pittsburgh. Now, the Blue Jays and Pirates will not play each other this year. Pittsburgh, of course, is in that central grouping, the Blue Jays, of course, being in the East. And if I'm not mistaken, there are only 7 dates out of 60 where the Blue Jays and Pirates are scheduled to play at home at the same time. That opens up PNC Park in Pittsburgh as a viable opportunity for the Blue Jays to play a lot of home games, not to mention the relationship the two franchises share at this point, because Ben Sherrington and a couple of former Blue Jays front office types followed Sherrington to Pittsburgh. They're now running that operation. Do you think Pittsburgh is legitimately viable? Are you hearing that? And what other potential major league sites, because we know Buffalo, we know Dunedin, what other potential major league sites could play a role here?
I think Pittsburgh, Scott, it's a great scenario when you consider the geography, the quality of the stadium, the relationship, as you mentioned, and that's where I think we're seeing for the Jays the benefit of having Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, just with all their connections in the sport. They are two of the best connected people in baseball in terms of relationships with other executives, and this is one case where that is abundantly clear. I think the geography of it too, because as you mentioned, those 7 games, so 7 of the 30 home games, if you played in Pittsburgh, would still conflict. You'd have to then find a secondary to your secondary option. Maybe that would still be Buffalo. And I think crucially, the Buffalo to Pittsburgh drive is 3 hours. It's manageable. It's not optimal, obviously, but we are in a suboptimal world, quite obviously, in so many ways. If you had to divide up a series between Buffalo and Pittsburgh from a standpoint of transportation, you could probably do it. Again, you wouldn't want to, but you might be able to if you really had to do it. The question of doubleheaders, for example, and playing both teams at the stadium in the same day, I don't know the feasibility there, because you want to have that deep clean whenever a new team comes in, and that might be a little problematic. It may be theoretically possible if everybody signs off on it from a health standpoint, but that'd be a pretty difficult thing to achieve. I think Pittsburgh of the major league facilities makes the most sense, just based on logistics and the driving ability. It's optimal because it's in the central third and wouldn't complicate matters being in the eastern third of the divisional scheduling right now. So I think for so many ways that's probably the optimal one, and then maybe Buffalo becomes the secondary option to Pittsburgh because of the geography. I had seen Charlotte mentioned. I think that's just a little bit too far from a standpoint of if you want to have the slash Buffalo Pittsburgh area be somewhat of your nexus. I think you probably just want to stay in those two spots and bounce between them, and at least they're not too far apart from each other, or frankly that far from Toronto either. So I think that is probably the most preferable situation. I think Dunedin is just the COVID-19 is really in a difficult spot right now in Florida, and then you also have the dynamic of the weather, which is certainly a concern there. So I think Pittsburgh, if it's being seriously considered, it's for a reason, and the major league caliber of that facility is it's one of the most beautiful stadiums in baseball. So I think in the midst of a very difficult time, Pittsburgh may well be the best spot for the Jays to play their home games in 2020.
All right, this is our last conversation before the season starts. So let's set aside COVID. We don't know whether it's going to have an effect on the season. We don't know whether the season's going to get played to its entirety. Only time is going to tell. We'll pretend that it will, and we'll go off of what we know right now. Give us, and everybody loves being prediction guy, give us your World Series and your World Series winner.
All right, World Series. I have thought about this before, so I had my answers ready. I've got Cleveland and the Dodgers in the World Series, and I have the Dodgers finally winning. I know that's not going to surprise a lot of people to have the Dodgers win, but they are so deep. We even saw last night a prospect, Mitchell White, had a great start for them in their game against the D-backs, and we barely even talk about Mitchell White. They're so good. So I just think the Dodgers have the best team. Now, I'll mention my sleeper. I think that's Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati meets the Dodgers in the NLCS and gives them everything they can handle. I think that's going to be an excellent team this year. Love their rotation. Sonny Gray, Luis Castillo with that changeup. I would sing it from the mountaintops. I think Cincinnati might be a top three or four best team in baseball this year. I really believe that strongly about them. So I would say the Reds are my strong sleeper, but I just can't put them ahead of the Dodgers yet.
You know me, John. I'm a Cubs guy. I think they're a middling team in the NL Central right now. So I'll tell you what, we all want it for Joey Votto in Toronto. Yes. Like I got to tell you, that guy, he's a fringe Hall of Famer right now. May end up being a Hall of Famer. We all want it. We all want it for him. And if it's this year or next or the year after, I hope that Reds team lifts up its boots and gives him a run before he's out of the game. He's 37 years old this year, so he didn't have a ton of time left to be at the top of his game. I hope he gets it.
I would love it. I think he's a Hall of Famer myself. Amazing career, such a thoughtful person, really authentic. I've always really enjoyed my conversations with Joey in the past as well. So he's a great Canadian. I know, a proud Canadian, and he's always represented Canada so well here in the game, as you both know. So that would be a great story. And maybe someday, how about a Reds Jays World Series at some point? That'd be pretty cool.